Have you ever been told you're fine? You know, when every single cell in your body is just screaming otherwise. That awful fatigue, the brain fog that makes simple tasks feel huge. That feeling your battery is always critically low. You go for help, get a blood test, and then you hear everything is normal.
It's incredibly frustrating. And when patients come in with those chronic, sort of unexplained symptoms, yeah, the thyroid is almost always the prime suspect. Yet the sources we looked at today make it really clear that relying only on the standard screen TSH and maybe total T4, well, that's exactly why so many people get dismissed incorrectly.
Yeah, we really dove into the source material on this. And our mission today is to cut through that basic testing protocol. We're pulling at the 7 key layers of thyroid function that the basic panel just completely ignores. Think of this as your shortcut to figuring out why you might feel symptomatic, even if the test says normal.
Right. We're moving past just surface data here. We're digging into the cellular mechanics, how the hormone's made, how it gets converted, and really importantly, whether your body can actually use the active fuel it needs.
Okay, so let's start where most tests start. TSH. What's it actually telling us? If it's the manager sending an email, what's in the email?
TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone, comes from the pituitary gland in your brain. It's purely a command signal. It tells the thyroid gland, hey, work harder, make more hormone. But what it does not measure is how well the thyroid is actually responding, or, you know, how effectively your body is using the hormone once it's made. TSH can look perfectly normal, but it's just reflecting the pituitary's view, not the reality on the factory floor, so to speak.
Got it. And then there's T4 specifically, free T4. That's the bulk product, right? The raw material the thyroid pumps out.
Exactly. T4 is the inactive hormone, the precursor. It measures how much the thyroid has made and released. But crucially, this hormone is metabolically useless until the body converts it into the active form, T3. So a high T4 doesn't mean much if it can't be converted or if it's all tied up.
Which brings us right to a key problem with standard tests, the binding issue. The T4 number might look okay, but if a lot of it is unavailable, we're back to square one, aren't we?
Absolutely. And what's fascinating here is the role of something called thyroid binding globulin, or TBG. TBG is like a taxi service carrying T4 in the blood. But when T4 is bound to TBG, it's inactive. It's just riding in the taxi. It can't get out and do its job in your cells.
And the sources mentioned that other things, like certain hormones, can actually increase that TBG.
Precisely. Hormones like estrogen, for instance, maybe elevated estrogen from birth control, or certain life stages can significantly ramp up TBG levels. If you have more TBG, more of your thyroid hormone gets tied up and isn't available for use. That's why testing total T4, which counts all the bound useless hormone, can be incredibly misleading. We really need to test free T4 and, critically, free T3, the parts that are actually free and available to your tissues.
Okay, so T4 is inactive bulk. The body needs to convert it into free T3, the active fuel. And this conversion step, this is where a lot can go wrong, and it's totally missed by that basic TSH T4 test.
Right. The conversion happens mostly in places like the liver, the gut, and the kidneys. If you have problems converting T4 into usable free T3, your symptoms are going to persist. Your pituitary might be happy with your T4 level sending a normal TSH signal, but your cells are essentially starving because they can't run on the inactive stuff.
So let's define that active hormone better, free T3. This is the one that really tracks with how someone feels.
Free T3 is, well, it's the gold standard for metabolic function. It's what directly fuels your energy production and impacts mood, memory, even gut motility. Our sources are very clear. Low free T3 is a major reason for that persistent fatigue, brain fog, depression, even when TSH and T4 are technically in the normal range. If the active hormone is low, the system is failing. Doesn't matter how much precursor you have.
And then there's this other piece that seems to throw a wrench in the works. Reverse T3. The body actually makes something to block its own fuel. Why would it do that?
That's a really good question. Reverse T3, or RT3, it's an inactive metabolite. Think of it as an emergency brake. When the body's under significant stress, like severe dieting, a major infection, chronic inflammation, maybe nutrient deficiencies, it starts converting that inactive T4 into reverse T3 instead of the active T3.
So it's trying to conserve energy during a crisis.
Exactly. It's deliberately slowing metabolism down to protect itself. But the problem is, if those RT3 levels stay high, it physically blocks the active free T3 from binding to its receptors on the cells. So you can actually have decent levels of active T3 floating around in your blood, but the high RT3 is basically blocking the door. You end up with classic hyperthyroid symptoms, fatigue, weight gain, but the diagnosis gets missed because the basic test only checks the supply line, not the blockade at the cell's entrance.
that cellular block. Wow, that's a scary thought. Okay, let's shift gears a bit. We've talked function conversion. Now let's look at the underlying disease state, because maybe the thyroid isn't failing just because of conversion, but because it's under attack from the immune system.
This is probably the most critical layer that the basic TSH test completely misses: autoimmunity. We absolutely need to look for thyroid antibodies. These signal an autoimmune attack, like Hashimoto's or Graves' disease.
Right. Can you define the two main antibodies the source material really flags?
Sure. The first is anti-TPO, the thyroid peroxidase antibody. This attacks the enzyme that helps make thyroid hormone. It's the primary marker for Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which is the leading cause of hypothyroidism. The second is anti-TG, the thyroglobulin antibody. This targets the protein that stores thyroid hormone. It's another key sign of autoimmune thyroid disease.
But wait a second. If TSH and T4 look fine, why would a doctor even test these antibodies? What's the harm in waiting until the TSH finally goes up and the gland is clearly failing?
The harm is years. Years of missed opportunity. These antibodies can show up in the blood, signaling the start of the attack, years before TSH or T4 levels become obviously abnormal. It's basically an early warning system that we've been largely ignoring. Finding these antibodies early lets you intervene with diet, lifestyle changes, nutrient support, potentially slowing down, or maybe even halting the disease progression long before the thyroid gland gets significantly damaged. It changes the whole game from just managing failure to actually trying to prevent it.
Okay, so we've got hormone levels, conversion, immune attack. Now, what about the raw materials themselves? Maybe the problem isn't the factory or an enemy attack, but just not having the basic building blocks to make the product in the first place.
Exactly. Making thyroid hormone is incredibly demanding on the body's nutrient reserves. If you're deficient in key building blocks, the whole process can just grind to a halt. And those deficiencies, completely invisible on a standard TSH T4 test.
So what are the crucial nutrients the sources point to, the ones that fuel this process?
The source material really highlights iodine, selenium, and zinc as essential. Iodine is, well, it's the core component of T4 and T3, the 4 and 3 in their names. That's the number of iodine atoms. If iodine's low, hormone production just slows right down.
And selenium, what's its role?
Selenium is absolutely critical. It's needed for the enzyme that actually converts the inactive T4 into the active T3. It also plays a huge role in protecting the thyroid gland itself from oxidative stress, which is especially important in autoimmune conditions like Hashimoto's. If selenium is low, that T4 to T3 conversion fails. Just giving someone more T4 medication won't necessarily make them feel better if they can't make the active feel from it.
Wow. So if someone is just low on selenium, they could be swimming in inactive T4, but still feel exhausted because they can't flip the switch to the active hormone.
That's the practical reality, yes. And we can't forget zinc either. Zinc is needed for TSH signaling to work properly, and it also supports immune function, another key piece for the overall health of the gland. Checking these specific nutrient levels alongside the hormone panel is really essential to get the full diagnostic picture and treat the root cause of the problem, whether that's production, conversion, or immunity.
Okay, so putting it all together, we've got the TSH-T4 context, the crucial free T3, the block reverse T3, the conversion status itself, the autoantibodies, those binding issues with TBG, and the nutrient levels. This whole comprehensive picture. That's the real goal, right?
Yeah.
Personalized diagnosis and treatment.
It lets us move past that incredibly frustrating experience of being told you're normal when you clearly aren't feeling well. We have to acknowledge that TSH and T4 are still the standard, mostly because they're, you know, cheap and they're traditional historically, not because they're the most robust tests for someone with symptoms.
So what's the ultimate payoff for having all this data? Why is this personalized approach so important?
The payoff is actionability. Instead of just trying to nudge a TSH number back into some wide kind of arbitrary lab range, this detailed data allows for really targeted interventions. If your free T3 is low, maybe you need medication that actually contains T3, not just T4. If your reverse T3 is high, we need to focus on lowering inflammation, managing stress. If antibodies are positive, we address the immune system directly, perhaps through diet and specific supplements.
It's the difference between treating a number on a lab report and actually treating the person who is suffering in front of you.
Exactly right. It shifts the diagnosis from just confirming, often late, that the gland has failed, to identifying the subtle, complex breakdowns in conversion or the immune system attack that lead to those persistent symptoms much earlier. It's about getting to the root cause.
Moving from that very limited two-marker view to this comprehensive, multi-layered understanding, It really shifts the power back to the listener, doesn't it? Giving them the info they need to ask the right questions, maybe even demand better answers.
Mm-hmm. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, I think the key takeaway is realizing that normal lab results, they often just reflect the pituitary signal strength, maybe the level of inactive hormone storage. They don't actually confirm that your body's cells are getting and using the active thyroid hormone they desperately need. So the real question, the one for you to consider, is, are you accepting a passing grade on a basic lab test when your body is clearly signaling that something is failing at the cellular level?